Hi, I'm Mike Webb, and welcome to the ProPublica podcast. If you're one of the millions of Americans who owns a cell phone, you've probably looked at your monthly bill and been confused by the list of charges. Senior reporter Jeff Girth took a look, particularly at the Universal Service Fund, a fee which is supposed to go towards subsidizing telecom and internet services for America's most disadvantaged school children and library users who are part of the government's E-rate program. He joins us from Washington, D.C. to talk about his new report on how the FCC has yet to take any action against carriers to enforce this rule, and how, in the end, victims of this failure are our country's school children and ultimately you, the consumer. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Thanks, Mike.
Why don't you tell us what your story is about?
Sure, Mike. It's about a program that was set up in the 90s by Congress to help avert a digital divide between rich and poor students, and it required phone companies to offer bargain rates to schools as they built out their telecom services and internet. My reporting shows that this low price requirement has been widely neglected by the regulators, the FCC, and also, at least for the first 10 years of the program, by AT&T, the large telecom giant. Moreover, the reporting also shows that when some of the largest school districts in the country, such as New York and Detroit, went about trying to find and get refunds for overcharges from the telephone companies, the FCC's rules actually penalized them when they did find such overcharges and created a disincentive for these schools to go out and find overcharges, even after they had found millions of dollars of overcharges.
Well, let's step back. Can you explain what was going on with the telecom companies?
Well, I think the way to look at it is that telecom business and telecom pricing in particular is a pretty opaque, complicated subject. The average person looking at their phone bill oftentimes is puzzled at what it means. So imagine what institutions like school districts who have to confront, you know, much longer, more complicated phone bills. And they really try and spend most of their time educating kids. So it's a bit of a disconnect, which is why this rule was put into place in the first place.
What's the rule, Jeff?
And the rule says that any telecom company that's providing services to a school under this program, which is called the E-rate program, is required to charge what's called the lowest corresponding price, which essentially means if you're selling something to a bank across the street at $10 and you have a similar service you're selling to the school across the street, then you can't charge them any more than $10. And, you know, basically the rule was put into place by the FCC, which implemented the law that Congress passed in 1996, the rule was put into place to help schools navigate the complicated world of telecom pricing. And the FCC realized that schools were unsophisticated and not very expert in this area, and that was the whole point of the rule, to try and sort of level the playing field. The companies say, and they've actually filed a petition with the FCC in 2010 through their trade associations, they say the FCC never really clarified and explained what this rule meant. And if you go back and look at how the rule was implemented and the discussion that took place and then the Byzantine way that the FCC set up the oversight over the program, there was not a lot of guidance provided to the companies. So, for example, we cite in the piece that the service providers were given training and guidance by the administrator of the program. And if you look at the last 10 years of their guidance posted on the web, it never mentions this rule once. And, you know, similarly, we say in the piece that AT&T, which is one of the biggest companies in this program and obviously one of the bigger telecom companies, that through at least 2007, their training for their employees in this program, their training manual, which is 61 pages long, it never mentions this particular rule either. Now, in fairness to AT&T, they became subject to a compliance agreement in 2009 with the FCC that required them to actually adhere very closely to this rule and monitor it better and file various reports with the FCC. So, and AT&T does say to us that they have implemented programs to comply with this rule. So I think, assuming that that all has been going on since the compliance agreement, the issue is, you know, what happened for the first 10 or 12 years of the program, and, you know, why was this rule sort of neglected or so little understood or enforced?
Jeff, why is this a ProPublica story?
Well, it's an examination of a government program and oversight of it and participation in it by, you know, some of America's largest telecom companies. And it affects not only, you know, what's happening at schools across the country and libraries, it also affects most everybody in the country who has a cell phone or a landline, because the program is paid for out of your telephone bill. It's not paid for through appropriated monies or taxpayer monies. So it's a government program that is funded by telephone users.
Well, let's talk about that. Why the FCC had oversight, right?
Correct. Under the law, the FCC was given authority to oversee this program. Now, it's a bit of a hybrid program because, unlike most government programs, it is not taxpayer money that pays for these services and equipment. It's actually money that people who have telephones, cell phones, or landlines pay. You can see it on your bill. It's usually something like Universal Service Fund, and it's there every month. And so right off the bat, it's a government program that an agency is overseeing, yet it is not appropriated monies. Now, the second sort of hybrid nature of it is that the FCC, in turn, turned the administration of the program over to a company called Universal Service Administrative Company, which is a nonprofit company based in Washington, which is staffed by a number of former telecom executives. And that company, USAC, in turn, subcontracted out to another company called Solix, which is based in New Jersey, which is a for-profit company, and they do a lot of the sort of back-office work, the invoices and paperwork, et cetera. So it's a quite unusual regulatory structure. The FCC has final authority over the program, but has, you know, sort of turned over a number of the responsibilities to these other entities. And as the story says, we got a hold of some audits that were done. I asked the FCC to give me all the audits before 2010 mm-hmm. that had anything to do with this particular pricing rule, the lowest corresponding price. And they initially said, we have 9 audits, so we're going to only give you 2, which they turned over to me. Neither of them mentioned this particular rule. And they withheld 7, and I appealed that, and they finally turned over heavily redacted portions of the 7. Again, no mention of the rule, though there is some evidence in the parts that weren't redacted of inflated pricing and overbilling and this and that, but they blanked out all the names of whoever was involved. And as they have said to me, there has never been any enforcement of this pricing rule in the history of the program, which began
Jeff,
in 1997.
If there was, are you saying that they didn't know the rule existed and that's why it didn't come up in the audits, or?
Well, who do you mean by they? The companies or the auditors?
I meant USAC. What I'm implying is that since they were staffed with former telecom execs, I'm wondering if it was intentional, is what I'm getting
at. Well,
I'm
not going to say what they did was intentional, but it's hard really to answer the question why they didn't, you know, look. They did give me a copy of some of their audit instructions, and it's mentioned as one of the things to look at when they're auditing schools, but their audits were focused mostly on looking at the schools and how they complied with the program, and they were, you know, quick to criticize and penalize many of the schools, and some schools are even frozen out from the program because they have gotten in trouble for not following this rule or that rule, and the rules are quite cumbersome and it's extremely complicated. Some of the applications can run 300 pages, and schools get in trouble because they're a couple days late with filing a form, or they didn't check the right box, and there's a lot of complaints. Some of the schools say they wind up in a black hole trying to deal with the regulatory bureaucratic issues. So they certainly spend a lot of time focusing on the school end of it, but they seem, based on the audits, to have spent a lot less time focused on the companies who were providing all the services and equipment to the schools around the country.
Right. Now, should the schools have been, it sounds like the administrators were a little bit over their heads. Should they have been better versed in the details of the program so that they could have gotten?
It's not for me to say, who should have done what. I mean, I think it is fair to say from my reporting that most schools, and I've talked to dozens and dozens of school systems, from the biggest to very small schools in places like Mississippi, and I've also talked to a lot of consultants who help these schools, and virtually all of them were unaware of this rule, which in a way proves what the FCC said back when the program was started, which is schools are kind of unsophisticated and unable to navigate this field, and the responsibility really was on the industry. As for why the industry didn't pay a lot of attention to it, their response would be, and what they say in their petitions to the FCC, is you never clarified what this rule meant. On the other hand, the companies did participate as far back as 1997 in the promulgation of the rule and came in and had meetings with and submitted comments to the FCC to help, draw up the rule. So there was, at least in the beginning, a dialogue about this. Why it kind of got relegated to a more quiet corner of the world, is a good question.
Okay. How did you find this story?
Well, kind of a long way about. Somebody came to me, last summer with some issues, because I had done some reporting on taxes, and they had some tax and accounting issues relating to telecom companies. It was a world I was unfamiliar with, and I didn't wind up doing anything in connection with that original tip that came in, but as I started inquiring around about the telecom industry and telecom pricing, I found someone who was familiar with this, and it seemed like an interesting avenue to explore because it had never been written about, and it was really sort of off the radar screen.
Right. And ultimately, I mean, it sounds like there are several things that need to happen to sort of make sure schools are getting the lowest rate.
Well, I think one of the things that goes on here is there's a moral hazard operating in a way, and that is that because schools don't pay, a lot of the costs for this, especially the poorest schools, their rates are subsidized up to 90%. So, and I found this in my discussions with schools, that, they're only, let's say you're a really poor school and you're only paying 10% of the cost. Well, the fund itself is paying 90%. Now, ultimately, everybody loses if nobody's paying attention to this, because the fund itself, and the piece points out that the fund is always oversubscribed and there's continual shortfalls and gaps in it. But the individual schools aren't really paying a lot of attention to it because they don't have as much skin in the game, especially if they're really poor. And then the question is, well, what about the companies who do have, a stake in all this? And in a way, the onus is on them to adhere to the rule. And as I said, their voice basically is, you never clarified what this really means, and so we don't know how to comply with it, and pricing's very difficult, and every situation is unique, so what does this really mean? Help us out. And then when you go to the FCC, and it's hard to find anybody there who can answer some of these questions. So it's a bit of a black hole, just like telecom pricing itself is.
All right, Jeff. Well, thank you very much for joining us and explaining this for everyone.
Okay, you're welcome, Mike.
That was Jeff Girth. You can see more about this story at propub.ca/low-price-mandate. And now our official Say the Darndest Things Tumblr quote of the week. My only condition is that there be Muppets involved, and that is non-negotiable. Who said it? Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, responding to actor-writer Jason Segel's request to make a movie with him. Okay, that's it for this week's show. A big nod of appreciation to Minhee Cho for producing, and to you for listening. For ProPublica, I'm Mike Webb. We'll catch you next time.